My name is Buzz Green and I'm a drunk. Tells me in this book I'm supposed to introduce myself as a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I'm not sure I am because I've been around here a little over 40 years and they never give me a membership card yet, you know. But I've been coming for a long time and I've got to tell you this, things get better. When he read that drop turning point, right, when we were full of self-pity and despair and it just seemed like it was the end of the world and wasn't going to get any better. I couldn't stay alive without drinking and I couldn't stay alive if I drank. And that's the point I reached when I called and asked for help. I didn't ask for help because I wanted to quit drinking. I wanted to get rid of that feeling and get rid of that terrible life I was leading and just be one of them nice guys. I went to church on Sunday. I took the kids to the zoo once in a while and would have a beer now and then. You know, my problem was if I had a beer, one was never enough. And 1,000 was never enough, right? I just couldn't stop. Once I started, I couldn't stop. I came to this fellowship hopeless and helpless. I went to St. Vincent's Hospital. It was a 5-day program back then. And I was in such good shape, they only kept me 10. After 10 days, they shipped me out here to Serenity West and after 28 days, they threw me out of there. They had told me I had an attitude problem. And I told them to go to hell. What the hell did they know? On the way home from that, my wife came and picked me up. And on the way home, we went by the geriatric center out there. And for some reason, I knew there was a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous in there on Sunday morning. And I told my wife, I said, there's a meeting of AA in there. Do you want to go? And man, she whipped in that driveway so fast that I had a whiplash. Right? We went to that meeting. Now, we got there just as it was starting. And as soon as the Lord's Prayer was over, out the door I went. I get out the door, and we went in and out the front door then. And there was all steps there. There was no ramps back in those days. And just as I'm ready to step off that front step, a hand grabbed me and pulled me back. I turn around and look, and here's a guy I used to drink with. I didn't like him. He was a drunk and a liar and a cheat, just like me, right? We never got along. We fought all the time. And I didn't know it, but he had not had a drink for 6 years. I didn't miss him, you know. He said, I'm going to be your sponsor. And I said, holy cow. You know, I didn't hear that part where you get somebody for a sponsor that you like, somebody that you can rap with, you know. I got this guy, I can't stand him. Right? And he tells me he's going to be my sponsor. And my wife was with me, and he reached around and pointed at her and says, whatever you do, don't let her get an Al-Anon. Holy cow, there's no way in the world I'm going to stay sober now because I really wanted to. By now I wanted to quit drinking and I knew I needed to stay sober. But there's no way I could do it. I got a sponsor I can't stand. My wife had already been in Al-Anon for over a month, right? She got in after I was in a hospital a couple days. And so she's already probably by that time a good brown belt, maybe black belt, I don't know. So I knew there was no way in the world I'm ever going to stay sober. And thank God that's the way it happened. Because if things happened in Alcoholics Anonymous and in my life, like I would have liked them to happen, you know, I'd have never made it. I'd have liked to have had some nice, happy guy like Jack here for a sponsor. You know, he's short enough I could hit him on the head if he got too mouthy. You know. Ed and I used to fight. I mean, literally. My first sponsor, we'd go to a meeting and And maybe the discussion at the meeting was on easy does it. And on the way home, we would be arguing so hard over what easy does it meant that when we got to his house or my house, depending on who was driving, we'd be out of the car and on the lawn, beating the hell out of each other to prove our point. That's the way I learned about AA. Thank God. Because if I'd have got a nice guy like Jack, I'd have never made it. He'd have made it, but I'd never made it. Right? And that's kind of like going to the fourth step. All right, we're going to talk about the fourth step tonight. And I had read the steps when I was in Serenity. One night we didn't go to a meeting, so I read in the book the steps. And then Ed asked me when I got out, he said, "What step are you working on?" And I said, "Well, I did them all one night when I was in Serenity." He says, "Well, then we'll start at step one." And that night was a really good fight. But we started through the steps, right? I started on a journey now. Ed told me when I got out of Serenity to read chapter 5 in this book, and that's how it works, all right? So I read chapter 5, and now I know how it works. And so for the next 10 years, I went to AA meetings. I drank a lot of coffee. I sponsored guys. I chaired a lot of meetings. I was a general service representative. I did everything they told me to do. But I had never read them first four chapters. And there was something missing. You know, you hear talk about that hole in the soul. I had a hole in my soul. I didn't know that until I was here for a while. That was my problem. But I had that hole in my soul. I didn't know it was wrong. And then I got a hold of a set of tapes by Joe and Charlie. And they went through the big book from Roman numeral 1. So I got a hold of the big book, and I had a couple of them at home. And I started reading from Roman numeral 1. And when I read the doctor's opinion, all of a sudden, it started to make sense. And then I read Bill's story, and it really made sense. Because, see, I started out with chapter 5, and I knew how it worked. I had the answer. Problem was, I didn't know what the problem was. You know, did you ever try and figure out what the problem was by the answer? It don't work very well. So I had the answer, and I'm staying sober, but I didn't know what the problem was. The problem was me, and the problem was the way, not only that I drank, but the way I thought. All right, my thought process was all screwed up from the time I was a little kid. I know that today. I didn't know that at the time. Had you told me that at the time, I told you you're full of shit. When I read those two chapters, and it made sense to me, now I knew I was an alcoholic, and I knew why I was an alcoholic. I know that alcohol is only a symptom of the disease, and drinking is only a symptom of the disease. I had to start changing the way I thought. So then when I started working those steps from 1 through 12, it made a whole different outlook on those steps. I wasn't doing those steps anymore to not drink. I was doing those steps to change the way I thought. And when I got to step four, now I had to really take a look at the way I thought. See, that first three steps were pretty easy. You know, I knew I drank too much, and I knew I was in trouble all the time. So if I quit drinking, things would get better. And then they told me if I turned my life over to God and my understanding, things would get better, and I would be restored to sanity. And I could see by now where the things I did when I was drinking were insane. The way I acted when I was drinking, that was insanity. To keep doing the same thing over and over and over, and every night expecting different results, that's insanity. You know, I just keep drinking, keep doing the same thing, and expecting tomorrow won't be that bad. Tomorrow I won't get that drunk. Tomorrow, it was always tomorrow. And I'd sit in the bar in the morning and I'd say, you know, I'd really feel bad about yesterday. I'd really feel bad of what I did last night. You know, and I'm sick to my stomach, and I've already got an eye opener in me, and maybe two. You know what? Tomorrow I'm going to quit drinking. Tomorrow I'm going to be one of them good guys. You know, tomorrow I'm going to be a family man, and I'm going to start living right. But that was tomorrow. I've already had a drink today. So by now I know I can't go the rest of the day without a drink. So I might as well finish off today, keep drinking today, and tomorrow I'll straighten out. Then I got to AA and they said, oh, you just stay sober one day at a time. Oh, well, I could do that. There was a lot of days I stayed sober when there was no money. My wife hid the checkbook and I couldn't find that. The kids had their piggy banks and I couldn't get a hold of any of them. You know? So there was a lot of days I stayed sober one day and I didn't die. I came in here and I started staying sober just for today. Now, that fourth step is I got to change the way I think. And they told me I didn't have to change it forever for the rest of my life. I just got to change the way I think today. All right? If I just change the way I think today, it'll be better tomorrow. And so I started doing that. They said, made a fearless moral inventory of myself. Fearless means without fear. Moral inventory means not an immoral inventory. And see, that's what scared me for a long time. I was going to have to make an immoral inventory because I had stole a lot. You know, I'd done a lot of things that I'm not even sure the statute of limitations out on them yet. I don't want to take a chance. I just didn't want to live that way anymore. So, my first fourth step was pretty simple. I was Secretary Treasurer of the Dobbs Group out in County Home. And back then, the membership was four or five guys. Two of them were always drunk. One was drunk sometimes and not drunk sometimes. And that was our Secretary Treasurer. And that was before I took it over. But then now I'm sitting there as Secretary Treasurer, and it went on, and I got about 4 months in, and the chairman says, oh, by the way, next week the lead will be Buzz. And I said, I can't lead. He says, why not? And I said, well, I'm Secretary Treasurer. I got to do this. He says, what are you doing when the lead's going on? And I said, well, I'm listening. He says, next week you'll be talking. So I went home and called my sponsor. I said, they want me to lead, and I only got 4 months. What the hell am I going to do? I said, am I allowed to lead? He says, well, yeah, you're allowed to lead. But he says, I would take your fourth and your fifth before you lead. Because he said, I led without taking my fourth and fifth, and he says, I almost got drunk afterwards. Well, I didn't want to get drunk. I've been around here long enough, and I didn't want to drink, and I didn't want to go back that life. So I decided I'm going to take my fourth and fifth. And the next night I was going to Conneaut, Ohio to a meeting, riding with one of the guys from Milk Creek, and he was supposed to be leading. And by chance, his sponsor had come up from Washington, D.C. He was an old-timer. And the two of them were going to both lead up there at Conneaut. So on the way up and on the way back, I asked him about this fourth and fifth step. And the old timer says, you're going to take your fourth step. He says, keep it simple. He says, if you were a liar, say you were a liar. We don't care who you lied to or what you lied about. Just say you were a liar. You know, if you're a womanizer, we don't care about the women. Just say you're a womanizer. And so in the big book, it says, when you take your fifth step, preferably with a man of the cloth. And I know today that it says that in the big book because when the big book was written, there was only 40-some guys that had over a year in. All right? And, you know, you had to be really careful when you tell a drunk what your secrets are, you know. So that's the reason they said with a man of the cloth, because there was no really substantial old-time AAs to that really understood the program. Today we've got enough old-timers that really understand it, that you're better off than taking it with the man in the cloth. But I'm not a Catholic, but I was going by the Catholic church up in Conneaut the next day, and a Catholic priest was coming down the steps in front of the church, and I pulled over the curb, and I says, Father, I'm an AA, and I got to take my fifth step. I said, do you know anything about the fourth and fifth step in AA? He says, well, a little bit, yeah. And I says, well, would you do my fifth step with me? He says, yeah, come on in. So I went to Catholic church, and I know today I was in a confessional, and I did a Catholic confession, and I'm not Catholic, all right? But that was my fifth step. And the next week I led, and I didn't get drunk, all right? But after that, I went to several retreats. I used to go to a retreat up Derby, New York, and a little Catholic priest was a retreat master up there, and I used to take my fifth step every year up there, my fourth and fifth step with him. And so I was doing my fourth and fifth step right along. Under the same idea, keep it simple, don't get excited, you know, no big deal, that I did when I, that first time. But then when I got the Joe and Charlie thing, and I started to look at that, I started to get more serious about this thing, and I started getting a little more into my step, into the step, taking a little more deeper inventory of myself. And as I took that inventory of myself, and I found out with the help of my sponsor at the time and some other people, that the real problem I had was not the things I did so much as why I did them. See, the things I stole, the people I hurt, all the inventory that I took was not really all moral. A lot of it was immoral. But the reason I did these things were out of fear. And when I realized that fear was running my life, even in sobriety, fear was still running my life because I had never really dug into them things like I should have. I never really sit down with another AA member that really understood what I was talking about and was able to go through that. And so once I did those things, all right, that fear started to leave. I was no longer afraid of drinking. I was always afraid of drinking. I knew it was a poison. I knew it was going to kill me. I had all the reasons, the logical reasons, to not drink. But I didn't understand what was causing that compulsion, and the disease of alcoholism was the way my mind worked. I was afraid of not being liked. I was afraid of doing things wrong. You know, from the time I grew up, I always thought I was a little different, and a lot of people agreed with me I was a little different. I grew up right here in this neighborhood, so a lot of people remember me. And I was different, all right? I was pretty much a loner. I liked to be by myself, but I also liked to be the life of the party when I started drinking. And I started drinking at about 12 years old. And I didn't know anything about the disease of alcoholism. My mom and dad just thought I was a bad kid. By the time I was 25, they had disowned me. I was legally disowned. I got a registered letter in the mail that said my mom and dad legally disowned me. Don't ever talk to them again, you know. Because I stole so much, and I they were in business, and I just took what I wanted out of that business and did as I damn pleased. So now I've taken that fourth step, and my life is getting better. Next week we'll get on to the fifth step, but now you understand where I was when I got into that fourth step. So have you got any questions now? Now's the time.
Thank you. Thank you, Buzz. All right, step right up. Who's first? Okay, Bob.
First of all, thanks for sharing for the last 4 weeks. I'm so glad that you were still alive when I came back. It's nice to see some old timers, because I know there's a few that are no longer with us. But I too was a womanizer in my day, and I pulled a lot of stuff that we all do, and mine just happened to be, you know, when I was a musician for 4 years, we played at the Best Western every 5 nights a week, plus I had a real job, so I was doing drugs and alcohol to keep up. But I just, you know, there's some people I wanted to make amends to, a couple I haven't yet. One I'm in the process of doing right now, and I ran over her like a steamroller, you know, but she found that while we talked, and she's glad that I'm back in this program. And so hopefully we might be able to repair the damage. I mean, that was 12 years ago when I left her. But for some reason, there was still a spark and an ember in both of us. So she's going through some health issues, and I'm helping her with those. So anyway, I just wanted to say that things are turning around in my life, and you know, now that I put the plug back in the jug, my head's a lot clearer, and I've got 11 months. And so I'm, you know, by the grace of God, restructuring my life, restructuring my attitude. And I'm hoping that the situation will work itself out. If it doesn't, then I'll be strong enough to just say, well, we tried, and, you know, it just didn't work. So anyway, thanks for being here. Thanks for being my friend.
Thank you, Bob.
Right behind you, Jerry.
I'm sorry.
Hey, Buzz, I want to thank you, too, with doing this step four. And I know it's going to help me a lot. My daughter's getting married in November. But going through my inventories now, my ex-husband, we've been apart for 20 years now. But becoming sober and listening to what a fourth step is all about, you know, I almost feel like, you know, I just got to call him up and say, hey, we're going to have a celebration in November, you know, and I feel like making amends to him if I have any amends to give to him. But now I feel calm and cool and collective. Ever since I got into AA, I'm like, well, what's the big deal? And I hope he feels the same, so let you know. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Marcia.
Buzz, Dave Shinowski, alcoholic. After you did the fourth step, I mean the fifth step with the father, was there penance involved, or you just do it?
No, he knew I'd never been that I don't even drive by that church, Thomas. I have to. Right? But he had no idea what he was doing, really. I know that now. After I talked it over with my sponsors and some old-timers, he really didn't. He was just trying to help me out as best he could. And it was good for me. It did what I needed to do at the time. I don't suggest that's the right way to do it, you know, but we all do things that are probably not right at some time or other, but it works. All right. With the marriage thing, you know, I never hit it very well with my womanizing, and I was married the whole time. And you know, my wife knew about it. In fact, there were a couple of guys who came to the house and threatened to kill me, told her they were going to kill me if I didn't quit chasing their wives and stuff like that. So she knew about it. All right. And of course, I lied about it. But when I sobered up, I asked my sponsor, what do I do about these things? How do I make amends for this? He says, you live the best possible way you can do today, and you treat her as well as you can treat her today. And he says, don't tell her who the women are. You know, don't mention any of that. Just keep that all. She knows you did it. You're going to sit down and tell her, you know, in a general way what you did, and you won't do it anymore. And not too long ago, one of the girls that we were working with said, men always, if they were a cheat once, they'd always be a cheat. And I said, no, that isn't true. Because I know a lot of guys in AA in the same situation I was. When we were drinking, for some reason, we just didn't give a damn. But once we sobered up, that was it. Because in the beginning, and my wife brings this up on her regular occasion, in the beginning, I said, no, I had no way I'd cheat on you because I'd get drunk. And I didn't want to get drunk, right? But today, it's an altogether different outlook. But those things, you know, get a way of working themselves out. If you just be honest about them and don't make something out of it that it's not, you know. Don't build something out of it that it's really not.
Thank you.
Thanks, Buzz. Thanks, David.
Hey, Buzz. Steve, an alcoholic. I just want to get your feedback, and I know where my head is on this. I'm almost 9 months in, second time around. First time only lasted about 3 months, but... You know, you come in, you hear different stories, you hear about this, you know, get a sponsor, work the steps immediately. And then you hear, you know, some people, you know, kind of say, you kind of, a lot of times I seem to hear people do that and kind of say what you did, which is, you do that, but there's a hell of a lot more to it, maybe, and to go back and do it. And I know it's something that probably needs to be done multiple times. And again, I know where I'm at on this. I'm more of a measured person at this point. But I wondered, you know, with your experience, what's your take on that in terms of with a new person coming in, would you still say, jump on it now, do not delay? Or is your thinking more, be a part of it for a little while and then go from there? Just
Every person is different. And I believe when I'm sponsoring somebody, God allows me to know what they can handle and what they can't handle, all right? And some guys I push, and it tells me in the big book, all right? When you do step three, there's two paragraphs and it says next, all right? When you go through that big book, it's next, 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 all right? When you're through with step four, it says next. It doesn't say 6 weeks from now, 6 months from now. And I believe there was a lot of us that when I came in did chapter 5 first. That's about the time rehabs were starting. All right. And there were rehabs where people are going through a rehab like I did, and people in a rehab really didn't understand what the hell they were doing, I'll guarantee you, back then. So there was no push to start it right away. But the original AA members in Akron, Ohio, if you didn't take 1, 2, and 3 the first week, you probably didn't make it. You probably didn't come back. And then once you took 1, 2, and 3, next thing you're upstairs in Dr. Bob's house in a little bedroom, and you took step 4 and 5 right there. Or if you were at, what's her name, that had the big house when they moved over there. But... Huh? You're right. And you did that, and you did it right away, all right? And I believe myself, having worked with guys ever since when I did it the slow way, or when I do it the faster way, the success rate is much better when you do it faster, all right? The longer you put it off, the longer you set it aside, the less importance it gets. And to me, we need to stress the importance of the steps in this fellowship. That's why when we were here last week, Kevin said something about the 12 and 12, and I said, I'm only talking about the big book. Because there's new people here, and I can give you a half a dozen books that explain the steps, all right? And they're all basically based on the big book, but they're based on the big book. I think we need to go through the big book first. We need to study that big book first and then we can branch out into those other things. I think that all the answers are right here. All right. And if anybody has a problem, we can find the answer here a lot quicker than we will in the 12 and 12, a lot quicker than we will in the little red book, or stools and bottles, or one of them other Joe and Charlie tapes, or the Joe and Charlie. I've known them. I went to a couple of their seminars. All right, and I became very good friends with the second Joe. And he was here, and we did a big book study in Erie one time at Cawley Auditorium. And afterwards, he had never been around the Great Lakes much, and he was from Arizona, and he wanted to just visit for a while. So he stayed at my house, and we went to Chautauqua and drove all around, and it was a great week. But I said, you know, Joe, we're using your buddy Joe McQueenie's book, The Steps We Took, which is a very nice explanation of the 12 steps. And he says, yeah, I know, every asshole that wants to rewrite the big book, you know. I dropped it. I didn't say no more, because they're buddies. I've got CDs of them, all three of them being on the stage talking. I mean, they weren't enemies or anything, but that's what he said about doing the steps we took. And so I still use the steps we took. I refer to it a lot, but when I'm doing a basic study, it's out of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if I go to a lot of other books, when you leave here and you get home, you're not going to know where to find it. If it's in this book, you'll be able to find what I told you. Understand that? Did I answer your question, or you?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Thanks, Buzz.
Sometimes
it's Chris,
I get
right?
Just rattling on. Don't answer the question.
Hi, Buzz. Diane Wash here. I've been told by the people such as yourself that follow the big book to a T that the steps are in order for a reason. And we shouldn't try to jump from the third step to the ninth step, back to the fifth step, back, you know, jump around, but actually go through them. That I found, at least for myself, that if I didn't fully accept and work the first three steps, that if I tried to do my fourth step, I probably would have went out drinking, because I didn't have that power behind me, my higher power, to help me through that process. And I try to guide the women I work with that if you haven't really fully worked the first three steps, don't even try the fourth step, because if you start dredging up that crap, you're not going to be able to deal with it. Do you believe that too?
I believe that 100%. And I think that's why my first sponsor told me before I led to do my fourth and fifth, so that when I got up to this podium here, I wasn't taking my fifth step from the podium. I had a reason to do that and get it over with before I got up here. This is not the place to take my fifth step, all right? But I can tell you how I took it, all right? And what I did, we're supposed to explain in a general way what it was like, what happened. And what happened is I took them 12 steps, all right? I started applying them 12 steps, and maybe not nearly as well as I do today, all right? I don't expect any new person to do it like I do it today, all right? You know, it's on my mind. It's a way of life for me. It tells us in the big book it'll be a design for living, and that's what it truly is. This is a design for living, living the right way as far as I'm concerned. But I had to practice, practice, practice. You know, the Americans say practice makes perfect. Well, none of us are going to be perfect. But the German translation of that is repetition makes the master. And I believe that 100%. The more I do something, the more I get into those steps, the more I read them, the more I talk about them, the more I try to practice them in my life, the better I get at it. It's like playing the guitar. I could never be as good as Casey. I can't even tune a radio, let alone a guitar. But I no matter what I want to do, all right? When I was breaking horses and breaking dogs, it's repetition. It's repetition, repetition, repetition. That's how you get a good horse. That's how you get a good dog. And one of my problems was when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, I also thought that's how you trained your wife and your children. And I found out that isn't really true either. But, I had a lot of changes to make in my life. Did I answer your question, Dan?
Thanks, Buzz. Anyone else?
Good evening, Buzz. I'm Lou. I'm an alcoholic. Buzz, I've been stuck on the fourth step for quite a while, and this is the step that I came here to really get to the bottom of. And I was curious to know how far back you think one ought to go. I've been generally an asshole my entire life. I got kicked out of three different schools before I was, I didn't graduate. I got a GED. I was totally in trouble my entire life. Started partying at like 12, 13, 14 years old. And, I've been carrying around, I've been sober for 8 years, spent a little of that time as a dry drunk, got back into it, never did a fourth step. And I think that's one of the reasons that, I spent some years as a dry drunk instead of a sober person, is because I didn't do that fourth step, and that's where I've struggled. And what I struggle, I think, the most with is how far back, do you need to really go? I mean, there's stuff that I carry regrets from or resentments about that go way back into, my early teens. And to complete a fourth step and to be that thorough, even though the big book says be thorough and fearless, I mean, is there a stopping point where I think, I'm 46 years old, I've been sober for about 8 years, but I really should do I really think, from about 44 to about 18 years old, I got shit in there that I would love to, not have that hole in my soul anymore. I'd like to get this shit off of my shoulders and out of my head, to start moving forward, and I want to do it fearlessly and thoroughly, but at the same time, I'm not your average asshole. I was like full time. I mean, I really have gotten in trouble. I've gotten in trouble and stuff. I've never gone to jail or anything like that. Thank the Lord for that. But I mean, I've broken the hearts of every person that has ever loved me, or that I've ever loved. I've hurt my family repeatedly, mismanaged my money, told lies, and I've done that for years and years and years and years and years. So like you were saying, keep it simple. It's not that simple sometimes for me, and I'm looking for some guidance on how I can fine-tune this so I can finally put some of this shit on paper and go see a clergy or deal with my sponsor on it. I've been working with the sponsor on it, but I'm open to other opinions as well,
Well, I would say work with your sponsor on it, all right? I don't know who your sponsor is, but work with him on it. But if there's anything that's bothering you, I don't care if it's from when you were in diapers. If it keeps coming up in your mind, then you got a problem with it, then you better get rid of it, all right? Or it'll grow into something you don't want it to grow into.
Right.
And once you get rid of it, you'll be amazed it's gone. It doesn't come back. That's the thing that amazed me. I had a lot of things I would never tell anybody. And for several years, I went up to Derby, New York at a retreat, and I sit there with a Catholic priest. He was an AA. He was a great guy. And we'd sit there, and I chewed Copenhagen, and he did too, and I chewed Red Man, and he did too. And he smoked a pipe, and I quit that. But we'd sit there, and we swapped more war stories. And we really did my fourth step,
all right.
Or my fifth step. But I always knocked a little more off, and he always told me I was doing good. But it wasn't until I got a hold of some people, Joe and Charlie and some friends of theirs, that I really began to understand why I had to go back and take care of that stuff I did when I was in high school. All right? Take care of that stuff. My father was one of the founding members of this fire department. He's an honorary chief till he died. Someplace around there, there's a picture of him hanging on a wall. All right? But I grew up in this neighborhood. All right? My dad was a well-respected man here. And I just kind of blew that all apart. You know, I just was not respectful of anybody, even when I was a kid. When I just started to drink, you know, when I just started to get into trouble, I was very disrespectful of a lot of people. And that bothered me. It used to bother me when they started having meetings here. I had a hard time coming in here for a meeting.
Yeah.
All right. Now, like I said, my father disowned me. But because of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was able to take care of him when he got into his senior years, him and my mom. And I was able to be with them when they died. I'd made my amends to them. All right, and I sit there at the bed and held their hands when they were dying, and they were very excited that I was staying sober and changing my life. But, see, I had to get to that point.
Right.
And had I not taken that fourth step from them early times, all right, I don't know if I'd ever been at peace, and peace is the name of the game. A peace of mind, a peace that it talks about, a peace above surpasses all understanding.
Yeah.
That's what I'm looking for.
That was this morning.
Huh?
That was this morning in the 24-hour book you're quoting.
Okay,
this
well, it's
prayer.
In the Bible, too.
Yeah.
Bible I read, anyhow. But the thing is, if you want that, you got to get that garbage out. All right? And if there's things that, if you say there's things you did when you were a kid, probably before you started drinking, you had a bad attitude.
Yeah.
And there's things you did that you never really said I'm sorry for or apologized for. And now's your chance to do that, see? You do that, get it out of the way. There's a lot of things I did when, like I was talking about my wife and my troubles there, all right? There's just things you do and you get that garbage cleared up and out of your life, so they can get on and live in the sun light of the Spirit, all right? I can remember coming home from... I used to go out to prison a lot. I spent more time in prison sober than I did drinking. 25 years, I went out to Albion Prison from the time I opened up out there, right? And carried the message in there. But one of the guys that was going in with me, he was having a little trouble with his wife, and on the way home one day he said to me, he said, told me what was going on, and he asked me what I thought he should do about it. Now, in the first place, I'm not a marriage counselor, but I told him, I said, you know, if I was you, what I would do is stop at Kmart or Walmart or someplace in Giant Eagle on the way home, get a dozen of them cheap flowers and a box of candy, and take it home to your wife and say, I'm sorry. Oh, he says, that's not what so-and-so told me. I said, well, what'd he tell you? And he started to tell me, I said, wait a minute, how many times was he married? He says, 4 or 5. I said, well, by all means, take his advice. I've only been married once. What do I know? He said, you son of a bitch, and he went to Giant Eagle and bought a dozen roses.
Smart man. Yeah.
Did I answer your question?
You certainly did. Thank you.
Thank you.
Excellent. All right, we're just about out of time then. Do we have any announcements from the membership?